show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute and a half past the hour, and we begin this edition of The Horn, this 14th day of November, 2014 edition. Hey, it's Friday the 14th. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Never mind. I can't keep track of the stuff I'm supposed to be superstitious about. Well, whatever it is, it's Friday on the front porch. Hot diggity. Our weekly end of the week roundtable panel of extraordinary, ordinary experts in everyday living will gather together here in fairly short order for a rousing Jim Dandy fine conversation, moderated as always, yea verily, for lo these many years, by the indefatigable Sparky. Good evening, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Yes, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go to jump into the chat room, the rousing real-time multimedia experience that accompanies this program. And by the way, good evening, just on the odd chance that you're out there, to any of Jack Gravely's listeners. I had a rousing good conversation with Jack over on WLEE AM 990 this morning, over in the greater Richmond area, hence the WLEE, you can probably imagine. It was a great conversation about Don Blankenship, about mountaintop removal, about people being poisoned for profit, about the futures of the Democratic Party. It was a Jim Dandy good conversation with a lot of callers and so forth. And I extended an invitation to anyone who was listening to join us in this here little evening round table. So if you're out there, good evening and welcome. Yes, indeed, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, in fact, our home. And like I said, you go to that's where you go to get into the chat room, which we will fix. I promise. It's not irretrievably broken. It's just a bubble off plumb right now. And it's just a matter of getting the right things done in the right order. You know, there we've got all the right words. All we have to do is get them in the right order. Yeah, a little early yet to be jumping in on the phone lines, I think. It's only 4 minutes past the hour, but we will open up the Friday on the Front Porch phone lines in fairly short order. Let's see. Also at Head On Radio Network, of course, headonradionetwork.com, that is, you will find access to the archives. You'll also find access to the live stream via the pop-out players that work ever so well. Of course, if you're on some sort of mobile device, an iThis, an Android that, we recommend the apps from both TuneIn and Stitcher, as well as uTunes, where apparently if you drop the $5 for uTunes, you will not see ads, and that's a very good thing. And we thank Sal for turning us on to that. There's all kinds of different platforms out there, but those are the three that come immediately to mind. Let's see. Oh, yeah. I'm almost forgetting. This little 10-year conversation is a product of you. We should probably start every evening with the horn, brought to you by you. You'll never hear a Buy Gold ad here. You'll never hear a Bose Wave Radio ad. You'll never hear an ad for an herbal remedy to give Jim Bob an erection, or any other Bob for that matter. No, you won't hear ads for bowling balls that can be picked up by vacuum cleaners and dropped on Swedish mattresses featuring foam technology developed by NASA. I always wondered why we had to give up on NASA. We spent all our money developing mattresses for some radio ad per inquiry company. No, the only thing you'll ever hear on this program is, hey, thanks very much to your name here for helping us meet tonight's fundraising goal. We have a nightly fundraising goal. You know that. Most of you, unless you're really new to all this. We have a nightly fundraising goal of generally, unless we have fallen behind, $150. We have that this evening. Actually, we have a $200 fundraising goal. It would be significantly more were it not for the kind action immediately following the program last evening of Brenda. Thank you very kindly, Brenda, for taking us down to only $200 to come even with the week. So it's there, and if anybody would like to post a challenge or anything like that to get us started on next week, that would be awesome too. And when you think about it, a radio program that reaches wherever on this planet there is an internet, is internet capable, well, $150 a night is a bargain, a huge bargain. And by the way, it also reaches outer space. Good evening, sand creatures of Comet PU67. Yeah. Good evening, gooey denizens of Norblap 12. Welcome to the horn. One of these nights, one of them's going to call in, you know. So, anyway, your help via the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute is much appreciated and, well, frankly, a necessity toward maintaining this process. What else? Well, your conversation, your ideas. If you want to get in touch with the program, bobkincaid@gmail.com, BOBKINCAID @gmail.com. If you want to send an email, if you want to reach out via Skype, and I'm signing into Skype right now, you can always send a contact request to bobkincaidhorn, BOBKINCAIDHORN. You can even call the program that way, Skype to Skype. On Twitter, I am @BobKincaid. On Facebook, look at that. Again, Bob Kincaid. And the spelling is always the same. So however you choose to participate in the conversation, or if in fact you choose not to participate at all, we thank you for your time, for it is finite and it is precious. You might, somewhere along the way in life, you might have more love. You might have more money. You might have more food. You might have better shelter. You will never, ever have more time. And the fact that people from around the world join in this conversation is deeply inspiring. And I love to hear from everybody. Regarding our conversation, what was it, Wednesday, when I was talking about my odyssey through the Dairy Queen drive-thru, and the fact that a medium Orange Julius and a large Orange Julius come to $6.66 with tax, and how I was thinking about maybe putting on a devil mask and going through the drive-thru, well, that engendered a response from Bob, different Bob. In fact, the email was titled "Bob, don't do it." Hiya, Bob. Hey, Bob. Listening to the podcast from the other night, I enjoyed your tale of the trips to Dairy Queen, Orange Julius, but whatever you do, please do not show up there in a devil mask. I can already see the headline. Devil Internet Radio Host Blown Away by Hero's Freedom Protector. I'd be surprised if the staff is not packing, and I need you around for a long time to help me get through the depressing situation that is likely to worsen here in North Carolina, Bama. Stan. Got to put Stan on there, Bob. Yeah, I got to thinking about it. No, I don't think I'll be doing that. The devil mask thing would be funny. But it could, yes, I had already considered it, be lethal as well. Because around here, here in Appalachistan, we still, a lot of us, believe in the devil. Brooga, 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 grab your soul and take it to hell. So, no, I will be, Bob, there in North Carolina, Stan, I will be taking your advice to heart. Ain't going to happen, but, oh, it'd be funny. Hey, wait, could we modify it a little bit? Could we do maybe, welcome to Dairy Queen. May I take your order?
Hello? I would like a large Orange Julius and a medium Orange Julius.
That's a large Orange Julius and a medium Orange Julius, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
That'll be $6.66.
I know, I'm Satan.
Yeah, before you can drive a wreck. No, because I go back to what Horst says. Don't screw with the minimum wage workers who are just there to try to make a living. Got it. Hey, wow, that's awesome news. That's awesome news coming in from Sparky. Our buddy Harry from Baltimore will be joining us in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group this evening. That is exciting indeed, because Harry always brings, whether he's writing or occasionally calling, brings a lot to the table. That'll be a lot of fun. You too can participate in the Friday on the Front Porch panel of Extraordinary Ordinary Americans. All you got to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and just as he did with Harry, Sparky will get you right with Skype and ready to roll. By the way, thanks for going out early on in the program. Here are only 13 minutes in. Thanks going out to our good friend Thomas Jug of Punch in the chat room for his help in getting us to the end of the week to the good. We now only have $170 to go. 17 folks at 10, 34 folks at 5, 10 at 17. It's an odd prime number, and that makes the divisibility issue something that's tough for somebody who doesn't do the cipher and the gazettas real well. So there we are, 15 minutes into the program, and we'll talk of, you know, the beauty of the horn is that we are not limited just to whatever it is that strikes my fancy. There's plenty of other stuff, and you, of course, have to bring it to the conversation. Nice group forming up in the chat room. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker, News Ninja. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. How you doing, Lance Rocks? Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Will from Chicago, and Sparky Dunk right there riding herd on it all. Ah, yes, I am reminded. Thank you, Carol Baker, for the reminder. There is still an offer out there. The first person in with a $75 contribution gets a hand-picked, personally packaged shipped with loving care and great good wit, Hooterville Holler gift basket full of jams, jellies, maybe a jalapeno beef stick, who knows. But when Carol Baker sets about putting a package together, you can bet it's going to be a darn fine care package. I ripped through mine in no time flat, and oh my goodness, Agnes went after the peach jam with a will. So it's there, $75, and I'll have to check in with Sparky and see if we've still got the pistachio and or smoky ghost pepper cheese premium available. It would be nice to go get this week done nicely and then start on the next one, the one coming. Thank you very kindly, Carol Baker, for the reminder. Oh, let's see. You know, nothing says protecting our American freedoms like the freedom protectors of the open carry movement. Because back when this country was being founded, why, everybody just marched up and down the street. Thomas Jefferson did not go to the privy without taking his Second Amendment remedy there. You never knew when you might have to shoot a snake down the hole, you know? Rat. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, there was Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin carrying his 50 caliber unrifled musket there every time he went out to print a new broadsheet of Poor Richard's Almanac. George Washington there, what is he famous for? Lounging under his fig tree, you know, with a musket. Everybody everywhere in America carried them a shooting gun back in the days of freedom and patriotism. And so that's what the Second Amendment freedom protectors and open carryists are all about. Especially Rob Kinnison. No kin to Sam, apparently. Rob Kinnison is an open carry activist. And he makes videos under the name Raging Rob. Everybody needs a handle, right? I mean, it's kind of like when our buddy Grant out in Portland decides to go off. We call that a Grant rant. Well, Raging Rob is all upset at Moms Demand Action, because Moms Demand Action, they're trying to destroy freedom. Wolverines! Yeah. Raging Rob's, Rob Kinnison, Raging Rob's big issue is he wants to make sure that he can carry on our freedom traditions in America by carrying firearms down to the Kroger. Mm-hmm. Yep. We got Kroger here, too, and I prefer to shop at Kroger, although I've kind of had to stop since they won't tell people that they ought not be carrying guns and that there's really not that much to be afraid of down there in that ethnic aisle. That's what it's called, ethnic food. I mean, that's where your matzah is, and your curry paste, and your tomatillo salsa. That's in your ethnic aisle. Mm-hmm. You know, Rob's real upset that Moms Demand Action has been suggesting that Kroger needs to tell its shoppers that really, they don't have to put on the full boonie suit and sneak over through the vegetables down past the oranges and the floral shop, down toward the frozen seafood. You can just walk right in, grab a buggy, and go shopping. And you really don't need a sniper rifle or anything. Well, Raging Rob's not having any of that. And he's going to continue to protect freedom by sending pictures of himself carrying deadly weapons into the Kroger. Because, you know, you never know. You never know when all hell's going to break out over to the Olive Bar. You just don't. And when they run out of sourdough, well, you never know that you never know when some tourist is going to decide to shoot the place up and destroy freedom because they've only got it in the unsliced boule and they don't have it with the slicing done yet. Let's check out Raging Rob.
Open carry is legal in 40 states. Until the mothers demand action, shuts the f*** up! I'm going to send photos of Kroger, of me inside Kroger, outside Kroger, with my gun, inside Kroger, whatever.
Doesn't he sound like he's just exactly the kind of person you want to see carrying a firearm around in public? Yeah, that's what I thought. I hate to interrupt the young man.
Open carry is legal in 40 states. Until the mothers demand action, shuts the f*** up!
Yeah, because see, mothers demand action need to shut the beep up. Because as a freedom protector, Wolverines! Only Second Amendment open carry activists have rights, especially in free speech rights, because the only people who have free speech rights are the people that has the guns and the Second Amendment rights to back them up. See? So moms demand action need to shut the presumably F word up. Oh, did I mention you might want to avail yourself? I know, it's a little early in the program. You might want to avail yourself of the duct tape and the hockey puck at this point in time. We're barely into the full clip, and Ron and Raleigh's already writing in. Hey, Bob, this brings new meaning to the announcement.
Clean up on aisle 3.
What a bunch of goddamn sissies. I prefer the word cowards. Everybody knew he was the coward of the county. Yep, too chicken shit to be able to walk into Kroger's and go buy an avocado. I ain't buying no avocado, that's green, and that green stuff, that means you don't love hydrocarbons! Don't love coal. Ain't buying, the friends of coal ain't buying nothing green no more, because green is communism. Nah, I'm kidding. Thank you, Carol. Carol's a giver in the chat room. She's passing out the hockey pucks even as we speak. I'm trying to vamp a little bit to make sure that everybody's got one. Got a good bite mark into it before we go any further. Are we good to go? Okay. When last we checked in with Raging Rob, who, by the way, as a sidelight, in addition to be a Second Amendment freedom protector, Wolverines! Also, from his @RobHot1982 Twitter account, sends out retweets and videos of neo-Nazi and white power groups who, among other things, are out there pushing for that white revolution. Yeah, they're just Beatles fans, because remember, Revolution was on the White Album. So White Revolution just refers to... I'm trying!
I'm going to send photos of Kroger.
Of Kroger? Yes?
Of me inside Kroger.
Oh, my!
Outside Kroger.
Uh-huh. I think there's a Kroger theme developing here.
With my gun inside Kroger.
Boy, when he says, with my gun, you're just kind of glad. You know, the only one hand is visible in this video. The other hand is completely out of sight, and it's his right hand that's completely out of sight. And the shot is only framed from about mid-chest up, showing his strange, empty little melonish noggin.
Kroger, whatever. And I'm going to send those photos to Mother's Demand, MomsDemandAction.org, and I'm going to send them every day until Moms Demand Action shuts the f*** up. You shut your little f*** and admit that you're not going to get this one until you admit fail, until you shut up about Kroger.
And his beady little eyes are beginning to cast back and forth. This guy has some woman issues, I think. I'm guessing, and I admit, I'm only guessing, I'm guessing this guy votes Republican. Just, but, you know, again, just guessing.
I'm going to keep sending you photos.
Well, at least he's not threatening to shoot anybody yet.
Move on, put a in your mouth, and shut up.
Yeah, it was bleeped out, but you might be interested to know, because they haven't managed to yet censor the internet. He, in regard to their Kroger campaign, he just told Moms Demand Action to move on, put a dick in your mouth, and shut up.
Think about all the dumb that are around me, all the liberals that are around me, that would call the cops in an open carry, that don't know that this raging Rob has a gun in his holster.
Yeah, that's right, Raging Rob. You've got a gun in your holster. You certainly do. So what's he saying? If somebody sees this guy open carrying and calls the police and says there's a man with a gun in the Kroger, what's he going to do? Shoot it out with the Federales?
Admit failure, Mother's Demand.
That was admit failure, Mother's Demand dicks. The Second Amendment people must be so proud to have in their midst and among their ranks Rob Kennison. I mean, it just makes you tingly with patriotism, doesn't it? Or have you already chewed through your first hockey puck of the evening? Classy bunch. Classy. But apparently, apparently this is something that is happening more and more across the country. If you, like me, are a frequent visitor to Charlie Pierce's, what he refers to as a shebeen, you might have seen an article today by one of the folks whom he has invited to post over there, a fellow by the name of Lieutenant Colonel retired Robert Bateman. Robert Bateman has recently retired from the United States military and is spending a little time getting more familiar with his mother country, to wit, the United States, by, last I checked, sailing down the east coast of same. I am jealous, 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 jealous. So apparently, he writes today that they stopped for brunch on a Sunday past at a little place on the eastern shore of Virginia that he notes is known for the quality of their crabs and their inshore fish. He also notes that in this well-known establishment, there were exactly three tables occupied. Himself and his party, a party of apparently, I think, a couple, you know, some grandmas and grandpas maybe, and then a very, very large fellow who, it turns out, had brought his freedom protector to brunch. Because you never know when the ISIL Ebola terrorists, Ebola, are going to come barreling through for a nice steaming bowl of she-crab soup, and he was going to be there to prevent them and send them back to hell. More and more people are seeing this. Now, if you are a regular of this program, and generally everyone who listens to this program is our regulars, you know that I've been seeing this trend develop for a very long time. You know, you try to, let's say it's time to put together your Thanksgiving dinner list, and so you go to the Kroger and Well, there's your freedom protector, sort of walking bow-legged, John Wayne-ishly with the shoulders rolling down the Brussels sprout aisle. Yeah. Yeah. Wally World is not immune. Of course, all these white folks are absolutely safe doing that. On the other hand, if you happen to have high melanin content in your skin, the cops might blow through and blow you away. Nobody's ever going to blow away Raging Rob because he's pale enough to be protected by his white privilege, even though he's walking around with a deadly weapon strapped to his... we don't know anything about it because the photo was only from, like, you know, the nipples up, but never mind. No, he had clothes on and stuff. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh, subject line, funny. Funny how white dudes can stride into a Kroger with a loaded Freedom Protector while a black man with an air rifle can get shot dead at a Walmart. Yeah, ain't much funny about it, Ron. I know. But these proud advocates of the Second Amendment make videos in which they simply state that they wish to place parts of male anatomy in women's mouths who merely want to be able to go to lunch or to the grocery store without worrying about being blown away by said wingnut. Ay, ay, ay. And while Rob was more graphic and bleeped it out, you know, there's not a lot of bleeping that goes on in your average church service. And just, you know, I've mentioned this little theme that the West Coast of the United States is not immune. They're coming for you next, these right-wingers. And they already have fifth columnists embedded in your communities. Take, for instance, Paul Chappell of the West Coast Baptist College, pastor of Lancaster Baptist Church in California, who is decidedly upset. Let's see, what could a Christian minister be upset about? A Christian minister who is actually familiar with the text of his holy book and the preachings of his avatar, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate Rabbi Yeshua, he could be upset about inequality, because Yeshua talked about that. He could be upset about the way that the Congress has treated the poors, you know, cutting out access to nutrition, drastically slashing it. Attempting to change the tax code to take away things like the earned income tax credit or the mortgage deduction. He could be upset about that. And you know what? That would be right there in line with the teachings of Yeshua. He could be upset about the general lack of civility. Because, you know, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, did speak at one point in time about responding to hateful attacks by turning the other cheek. Maybe this pastor, brother, minister could be upset about the rampant hypocrisy inside his own sect, because, you know, Yeshua, his God, did once say not to pray loudly in the streets like the Pharisees, for they have their own reward, that kind of thing. But no. Pastor, brother, minister, Chapel of the Lancaster Baptist Church in California is upset naturally. Don't put the hockey pucks away. He's upset about the women's. Mm-hmm. Yes.
One wonders Whatever happened to purity? Whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to the days when girls said, I'm not going to be touched by every guy. I'm not going to walk down the aisle like a filthy dish rag on my wedding day. Whatever happened to that day? I speak no ill against someone who's had difficulty and sin in their past, but from this day forward, it's not wrong when a couple hundred teenagers got up here a few weeks ago and made a purity pledge. That's a wonderful thing.
A purity pledge? A purity pledge?
Sorry, Animal House moment.
Titus 1:15, unto the pure all things are pure. Now you listen very carefully.
You listen very carefully, because he's about to say something about something that was translated out of Latin, which had been translated out of Greek, which was originally written in Koine Greek, and has been and nobody has the original text or manuscript, and it was copied by hand hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times before it ever even got translated into Latin, and was copied by hand hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times before it was ever translated into the Queen's English, being Elizabeth the First, the King's English, being James the First. Y'all listen carefully, because he's going to interpret upon it, and maybe the spirit of prophecy will land on him.
That pure mom and dad out there, when those kids are up here, you know what they're saying? That's great. Praise the Lord. Because to the pure, all things are pure. But unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure, but even their mind and conscience is defiled.
There he goes, banging on the lectern. I imagine the shoe will come off in a minute.
I don't want to sound weird tonight. There's a reason when ladies come up here to sing that the rule, if you want to use it, the standard, call it, I don't care what you call it, call it legalism, call it control, I don't care what you call it.
Call it cabbage.
Yeah. Carol with a note asking, purity pledge. Have you seen those purity balls for the daughters or their fathers or their dates on a creep factor from 1 to 10?
I'd give it a 15, Dick.
Oh, yeah, and it ain't got a beat worth a damn, and you can't dance to it neither. Well, at least we don't want to see Daddy and little precious Lumpkin dancing. Oh, dear God. Yeah, I'm familiar. It's a multi-million dollar industry. There are purity ball invitations and purity ball announcements and purity ball dresses and purity ball jewelry and purity ball tuxedo rental and purity ball cakes and oh dear. I better not continue the list or it might get a little bit ribald. Yeah, it's one of the better cons among the evangelicals. And I'm sure that for a fee, pastor, brother, minister, chapel will host you some purity balls.
There is a standard in this church that the dresses are going to come down to the knee when a lady stands up here. I've been here long enough now, you can call me every name you want to call me. I mean, I just...
Yeah, we're not going to call you as intelligent. We're not going to also call you not a misogynist.
Just fill my name in the blank. They call me old-fashioned.
No, we call you asshole.
It's okay. Say, why, Pastor? I've counseled too many men to know.
Really, Pastor? You're in the men counseling business? Okay.
That if we don't have everything covered just right, they're not going to be thinking about wonderful grace of Jesus.
Wait. Jesus is their God, and if a woman is not wearing a beekeeper suit, they can't keep their minds on Jesus. That's a pretty dare I say it, impotent little God there they got going. I mean, one glimpse of some tarted up heathen ankle or neck, and the next thing you know, they're basting themselves in barbecue sauce and getting ready to go to hell.
Some of you men want to help me with this tonight?
Yeah, again, he's looking for help from the men. I recall a couple of nights ago when they were... Never mind.
We're just trying to keep the focus on him. I get so sick and tired of going to weddings and it's the bride's day and here's some Jezebel with hardly any clothes on strutting around the wedding. Look at, you come to a wedding.
Dude, that's not a wedding. That's a strip joint.
I know. We all want to shower with bleach now, don't we?
Wedding around here, show some respect to the bride. You go to a funeral and unsaved women do the exact same thing. You come to the house of God. It ought not to be a flesh show. It ought to be a place where Jesus is lifted high and His holiness is remembered.
Yeah, but He's wearing a dress, and if you lift Him high, everybody's going to see He's holy junk.
Say, well, Pastor Chappell, you know, here in California, this kind of message is just... It doesn't matter where you live. The Bible's the same, folks.
It's crazy everywhere. So, to review, women are dirty dish rags. You take your little victories where you can find them. I'm just kind of happy that he didn't go the menstrual route. Surprised, actually. This isn't, no, Marty, this is not a repeat of Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Because this isn't about religion per se. This is about the pervasive nature of misogyny in our culture. And Marty, this is in your state, buddy. They're just laying there in wait. Just waiting for the Koch brothers to pump a few millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe billions since it's California, into your next round of political campaigns so they can turn you into Talibanifornia. Robert in Australia with a note. Purity balls? Sorry, Robert, this is one of those American culture moments. Do they have one for their sons? Not really. Where sons take their moms? No, those are Oedipus parties. And pledge not to have sex until they get married? Or is it okay for their sons to sow some wild oats? You know, boys will be boys. But Robert has pointed exactly to the problem that lies herein. This is still a culture that places both responsibility and blame upon women for sex. Here's this guy complaining about the way women, whom he refers to as Jezebels. Oh, God. For how they dress. But anytime you hear something like that, please remember that what he is admitting is that men are incapable of controlling themselves. That's the thesis here. And it's not a Christian thing. It is a Christian thing. It's an evangelical thing. Here in West By Cole, Virginia, it is not unusual to see the Pentecostals in the grocery store. And the women are forbidden from cutting their hair, but they are also forbidden from having it on display. So consequently, they have to have it done up to Jesus, or all gathered up in a big old wad up on top of their heads. And they all wear identical denim skirts that go all the way down to their ankles. Believe me. And it's just pitiful. because regardless of how one's patriarchy is forcing one's women, and see the possessive there, is forcing women to dress, they are all manifestations of a deep and abiding hatred for women. Now, you can dress it up and say that, no, it's because we revere their purity. Well, in that, and all this talk of purity is merely a way of minimizing women and saying that mature, sexually active, self-actualized women are inferior. And it's all about virginity? Why are men obsessed with virginity? Because there is a mythos of the glory of a man having a female sexually for her first time. And it is, among other things, if we want to jump into the cultural and the anthropological, it's a property thing. It's a possession thing. But it's also a biology thing. Because back in the days before men or women understood exactly what the baby-making process was, I mean, there were rules. And I think they probably still obtain in certain royal houses. If a king dies, his wife has to be isolated for 9 months. I know this was certainly the case in as recent as the 19th century, to make sure that he had not gotten any more royal git on her. And it was the dead monarch's rights that were being protected. This sort of patriarchal oppression, it sneaks in all over our culture. One of the oldest, I know our buddy Steve's a lawyer, and I know there are other people who have had the law school experience among the Horn Family Commune congregation. Raise your hands if you remember the rule against perpetuities. The rule against perpetuities is ostensibly a property transfer rule, but and as regards real property, or even, you know, money, but primarily it's real property. I'm having to kind of cast back on this and think real hard. But it says that a transfer must vest, if it vests at all, within X numbers of years of a life in being. And as a young law student, when you first study the rule against perpetuity, you find out that the early litigation around the rule against perpetuities was centered on what happens if a woman is pregnant. All of this purity crap is born out of the fact that women are the givers of life and men are deeply, deeply, deeply intimidated by that. Yeah, see, there we go. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Wait a minute. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes. Bring back the Victorian era when they put skirts on piano legs. P.S., send that guy a copy of A Handmaid's Tale. Wouldn't do any good. I don't think he can read. I knew it. And this is the general response you get when you bring up the rule against perpetuities, and everybody refers to it as the RAP, the RAP, RAP rule from Steve. Thanks, Bob. I just swallowed my hockey puck. Tim from L.A. pointing out that since Brother Pastor Minister Chapel is from the Lancaster Baptist Church, it's always the Baptist, isn't it? I told you, they try to behave like normal people. They're not out there handing the snakes around and rolling on the floor and drinking strychnine and speaking in tongues and pouring Crisco over their heads or anything. They try to come off as normal. But then you talk to them for a little bit, and the next thing you know, you're hearing, "Well, but you know, we got to make sure these little Jezebels have purity, and I hate it when I go to a funeral and there's Salome doing the fan dance on the corpse." Tim from L.A. pointing out, this is Lancaster, Stan, one of the red cities in the county of Los Angeles, and it's in the high desert. It's hot as hell up there. The average income is dirt poor, and most up there live on government support. Yeah, we have rednecks, no offense to the West Virginians who fought at Blair Mountain, with no accents and no firearms either. We do have a meth problem, and with black folks moving in, believe it or not, there's white trash flight. No offense to my white allies, or your allies of color either, Tim. Honestly, though, Bob, you're correct. Just because we're a blue state, places like Lancaster Stan, Palmdale Stan, Red Bluff Stan, Fontana Stan, a.k.a. Fontucky, can totally destroy our state. Granted, the area isn't as religious nutty as the South. Snake handling is illegal in California, but we can change. More than 25 years ago, we were a red state. With people moving out because of taxes, our state turned blue. Now, combine religious nuttiness with tax cuts, I see California heading into the shitter. And no, my firearms won't help much. And Marty with a response as well. My state? Hell, I graduated from high school in Lancaster. It's where my bloody high school alma mater is. Oh, dear. Nice. Well, just remember, they're there, and they meet every Wednesday and Sunday and other days of the week during revival. And they're just waiting. They're just sort of laying there, laying low, waiting to come in and, you know, have their religious way with you and your Jezebel. You Jezebel women. Not kidding. I don't know. What are we going to, what shall we call this? Maybe, Adventures in Misogyny? Because not only, well, filthy dish rags. You know, I'd like to see that creep, refer to someone as a filthy dish rag. Now, nobody in his church would upbraid him for it because, you know, you don't dare lay hands on the, I mean, no. But all of these things are done by people in their safe places. One bigot talking to a bunch of other bigots. Or a guy in an idling tractor trailer talking about wanting Moms Demand Action to put male anatomy in their mouths. Yeah, that sort of thing. They never do it in public, though, do they? No. Well, let's stay on the theme just briefly. Of course, when we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of Friday on the Front Porch, everything is on the table, and you can bring whatever you want. Remember, if you want to join in, if you never have before, simply send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype, and we'll get you into the conversation. Another side of this sort of Dungeons and Dragons multi-sided coin that is the rampant nature of misogyny in our country is the so-called men's rights movement. one of the leaders of the men's right movement is Paul Elam. He is the founder of something called A Voice for Men, you know, because men are being kept down out there and don't have any voices. He wants... He wants Merca to understand that that we're just going to go swirly right down the bowl if we keep on letting these women folk get all womeny in our culture.
You know, you can see the same thing played out in teams that work on construction sites, where maybe some newbie comes in and accidentally pulls the trigger on a nail gun and plants one in his leg. They're not going to rush around him and say, poor baby. They're going to say, well, that'll teach his ass.
Yeah, really?
If he comes back to the job, he won't do that again. But they will get him to medical care, get him help and everything.
Notice this conversation begins with discussions of nail guns. We're going to move over into the women folk in a minute, but, you know, nail guns. Okay. I'm phallic about that.
There is just a different way that men do things with each other.
Yes.
And it results.
There absolutely is. And this guy is clueless. And he's got the little goddess of irony sitting on his shoulder. There's just different ways that men do things with each other.
It results in excellence. It results in civilization. It results in the aqueducts being built.
Wait, what? The different way that men do things with each other results in civilization? Do I have that right?
But they will get him to medical care, get him help and everything. There is just a different way that men do things with each other.
Yes.
And it results in excellence. It results in civilization. It results in the aqueducts being built and people landing on the moon and cures being found for disease.
Because no woman could ever figure out that mathy stuff. Oh my God.
It results in every positive things and some of the negative things that we experience as a world culture. But if we want to advance as a civilization, I'm sorry, ladies, but we need men to be left alone to work.
And yet at the same time, they want to make sure that while the men are being left alone, the men don't leave the women alone, because the men, seeing as how they're in charge of civilization and aqueducts, are also in charge of deciding what it is that constitutes being a Jezebel.
And to do their thing, and to be with each other.
This guy's beginning to sound a little Spartan. Men need to be left alone to do things with each other. I'm guessing this guy doesn't have a problem. Well, never mind.
To get things done, because that's how it works. It always has.
And we've eliminated...
Don't you love that conclusory statement, because that's how it works and always has? There's always been a lottery. Always has. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. Get me a rock. Which woman do I throw it at?
That to a degree, and I think we're paying the price for it with this country. We're no longer excellent.
No.
No. We are no longer excellent. Excellent, dude. Dudes, be excellent to each other. You'll notice he didn't say, like, women be excellent to each other. I mean, you know, Rufus knew what he was talking about.
Downhill. You know? And I think a part of it may be attributed to the lack of male space. You know, the workplace, for instance. It's incredible how men in the workplace used to just get on each other. You know, they'd harass.
Oh, she was working hard, the goddess was, that day. Men in the workplace just get on each other. And there he was, a-rutting on my Joe Bob. Email coming in from Agnes. Well, dear, I do have my red dress and my two tickets to ride the beast. Just call me Lilith. Hello, Seattle. I'm listening. Oh, wrong Lilith. Although she does from time to time call me Frasier. Oh, God. So wait. We got a note coming in from Carol. Men got us to the moon? My 81-year-old mother, now suffering from Alzheimer's, was back in the 1960s a photo etch engineer with Rockwell International. She designed the printed circuit board that went on the Apollo spacecraft. Well, for God's sakes, don't tell these fellers. They'll get on each other again. That's part of the problem. They can't focus on the task at hand. That's why we had to have a woman be in part of the... because all the men were on each other. You know, the world went to hell when we let them into our bowling alleys and golf courses.
Each other, basically, right?
Yep.
Women came into the workplace. Wait, you can't do what you've done for years. You've got to change. You've got to be nice now at work. And the men are like, what? Are you kidding? If it was just-
so these guys are arguing that men, and I resent this as a guy, these guys are arguing that men are a bunch of louts. And I have no doubt that these two are louts, but I don't appreciate them including me by reference in their loutishness.
God, I would have told him, go screw himself, you know? And now I got to not say anything at all?
No, dumbass, you just don't have to be a prick.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of harassment didn't happen until women entered into the workplace.
Right. Because you can't harass a woman till there's a woman around to harass. Man, that Aristotelian logic is a gift that just keeps giving, isn't it?
Hi, I have a vagina and a whole new set of rules.
No, you don't. I hope you don't. Okay, we've made it through the first hour of the program. We're getting very close to swirly straw and fruit jar time. Sorry, Steve. Email. The men's rights dudes. Steve says, this can't be real. Are they trying to use every stereotype and buzzword? Well, they don't really have to try. It's all they got. It's the language they speak. Robert in Australia noting subject line matriarchy. There's an interesting documentary series called Millennium, Tribal Wisdom and the Modern World. In it, the narrator discusses how many early cultures were matriarchies where women were in charge and where inheritance went down the female line of the family. Why? Because you could always tell when a woman had had a baby, you knew who the mother was, but you could never be sure who the father was. See? Hmm? I can't go any further with that. Not after, I have a vagina. Oh, sure, why not? Wait, really? They giggle like middle schoolers?
John, I would have told him, go screw himself, you know? And now I got to not say anything at all? That's right. So the whole idea of harassment didn't happen until women entered into the workplace.
Hi, I have a vagina and a whole new set of rules. Never mind what's worked for several thousand years. I'm female, and I know all about how to make 9,000 people work together and, you know, build a bridge that costs, you know, 2 miles of river.
Cooperate. We don't need to tell each other how bad we're doing. Cooperate, Paul.
Oh, Dr. Freud. Nah, never mind. Never mind, Sig. These guys are past help. So let's just call it quits there and go to the. Go to the extraordinary ordinary roundtable of that constitutes Friday on the front porch, shall we? You know how to do it. I presume that Sparky already has the bat signal out. If you want to be part of it and never have been before, get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. Of course, we always have the Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N, 304-663-4676. For those of you who cannot use Skype, that's sort of a race, though, because there's only one of them. Maybe one of these days we'll have a second one. But that's another fundraiser for another time. And there we are. The Gizmo line is filled. So until whoever is on the Gizmo line is off, do me a favor. Don't call the Gizmo line at all, because when you call the Gizmo line and somebody's already on it, we get the beeps and the clicks and the, because I have not yet figured out how to turn off call waiting on this particular device. Okay? Please, pretty please, matter of courtesy. All right? And I will announce when the Gizmo line clears. Okay? And we are still at $170 to go for fundraising this evening. Anyone who wants to help out is more than welcome so to do. Again, if you wish to be part of the Horn Skype chat group, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and he will bring you into the larger group, okay? So, yeah, $170 to go wrap up fundraising for the week. More than that, if you want to get started on next week and cut down on the sweat factor a little bit, which, you know, I personally appreciate. And the interface for PayPal is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Okay, because, you know, these aren't gifts. These aren't donations. These are a matter of a community supporting itself. Okay. So, yeah, break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Without a pair of horns, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. If ever an angel fell, Jezebel, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. If ever a pair of eyes promised paradise, deceiving me, grieving me, leaving me blue, Jezebel, it was you. If ever the devil's plan was made to torment man, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. Would be better had I never known a lover such as you, forsaking dreams and all for the siren call of your arms. Like a demon, love possessed me, you obsessed me constantly. What evil star is mine that my fate's design should be? Jezebel. If ever a pair of eyes promised paradise, deceiving me, grieving me, leaving me blue, Jezebel, it was you. If ever the devil's plan was made to torment man, it was you, night and day, every way. Jezebel, Jezebel, Jezebel!
Oh, come on, how could I not? The late, great, inimitable Frankie Lane and Jezebel. It worked. It fit. Come on. A question coming from the chat room, because there's the, you know, that reference to the devil and horns, and our buddy Stockton Larry said, I didn't think horns were determinative in the devil's gender, but that's because this is a very old song, and back when it was recorded, you couldn't say a pair of testicles in a Frankie Lane ballad, or any other ballad for that matter. It would be 1969 before the word fuck was ever even said in any song. Yeah. And then, of course, yes, there's the reference to Leaving Me Blue, proof again that you couldn't say you couldn't. Hey, let's go to the Extraordinary Ordinary round table of experts that is Friday on the Front Porch here at 11 minutes past the hour. In the Eastern Standard, oh my God, it's already dark outside, and Jesus Christ, isn't it cold time zone. We have with us, of course, this evening, moderating as always, Sparky. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
I'm fine. It's not dark here.
That's true. That's why I referenced the Eastern time zone.
And it's not terribly, terribly cold.
Yeah, so rub it in, okay?
But we're going to get some rain here shortly, I think.
Hot diggity.
Coming in next week.
So when
some yesterday.
When will it get ugly ass cold there?
December, January.
Okay.
If it does at all.
And ugly ass
is only freezing for us.
Okay. But further up where your stepson is, they get ugly ass cold, right?
Oh, they're getting ugly ass cold already.
And out there in the general area where Ferg was cowboying, they're an ugly-ass cold, aren't they?
Oh, they're really ugly-ass cold.
Okay, just check.
That's why it's great that he's not there for the winter.
It's definitely something to be missed.
Yeah.
Okie doke. There's Tim rubbing it in the chat room. Ugly-ass cold for Los Angeles is 50 degrees. Shut up, Tim. I love you, man.
Well, at least he doesn't have to hide out in the library because of the it's so damn hot. He can only find a place with air conditioning.
Well, I can tell you for a fact that the I remain grateful for the second season in a row for the Sparky Memorial heated rubber floor mat. We've got that going, and Agnes insisted on firing up the little propane burner back here, so it's actually not brutal. It's all the way up to 56 back here in the studio. I can stand 56.
Well, what you have better have that or the sauna?
Well, the thing I think you've got a better chance of warming the room up than you do of cooling it down. When we're in sauna phase, it just saps I just sit here and schwitz, and it just saps the life right out of you. I mean, there's an air conditioner, but even it can't even carry the weight.
Anyway, Tim was calling this place Red Bluff a stand.
Yes, he did.
Well, we went up to the small engine repair place because we had a weed eater my stepson was fixing for me. We went up there, and they have this canopy that comes out the front. You know, one of the metal kind of shed things with it. And they have flagpoles out, and they have the American flag, and then they have that State of Jefferson flag that drives me nuts.
Oh, nice.
With the double X's on it.
Right. See, I think the State of Jefferson flag should have Bugs Bunny holding up the two placards, the one with the screw and the other with the baseball on it.
But anyway, that's my report.
Well, good evening also, of course, to Lance. Lance is with us for the first time in the Horn Molloy Skype chat group this evening.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Okay,
good.
We got some,
hey.
But we okay, but we have an echo issue.
What should I do? Turn down the volume?
Let's see.
Are you on headsets?
Yes, sir.
You don't have a radio playing.
The radio's
You should have a radio. Anything external playing, Bob. You should be hearing Bob through the headsets.
Yeah. And
I just turned off the iPod that was silently playing the show.
There we go.
Did that do it?
Yep, we're golden. Good to see you
Thank
in the group.
You so much.
Good to see you in the group. You know, we just walk. You know, we just walk through these things just to make it a nice experience.
Well, on the Jezebel, I was wondering if anyone knows the secret dirty lyrics to Louie Louie.
I thought Louie Louie was secret dirty lyrics. That's what we were always told. That's why you couldn't understand him, because it was all just filthy.
I know what we said.
Which was?
It goes, stick my finger up the hole of love. That's all I know.
And that's why I love doing this program. I learn new things.
Every day.
Exactly. Good evening, Carol Baker.
Hello, my friends.
I presume you've chewed through, what, two or three hockey pucks by now after the first hour?
Chipped a tooth.
Oh, on the enameled logo paint?
Yes. Yes, indeedy. And speaking of weather, we're going to get 1 to 5 inches of snow here tomorrow. Temperatures are supposed to dip down to 5 by Monday morning.
I was noticing that our lows for Monday night are at 14. Now, with the oldness of the Kincaid Mansion here, I can tell you for a fact that will be like not having walls.
Yeah, same here.
And I'm not ready for this in November. I mean, not at all.
It's a little early, but I'm not gonna whine.
Well, it wouldn't do any good. But 3 solid weeks of this in January had me, you know, just about at Roald Amundsen state of, you know, Antarctic. I don't know, you know, the Scott expedition or something.
I'm just concerned with how fast I'm going through my firewood.
Oh, no kidding! It's gonna be a fun winter for little propane canisters here, I can tell you.
My house is all electric, and it's just too expensive to run.
Well, there's just no heat at all back here in the studio, and there's a window air conditioner, and in the height of summer, it's not so helpful. And you know, back here, we can either plug in a space heater or we can run the propane, and the propane's generally more effective, at least during program hours.
Yeah.
We just fired up the fireplace insert last night.
So, were you out and about being a photojournalist today, Carol?
Yes, I was, as a matter of fact.
And you found the Cletus Mobile?
I did. I was out trying to find Jesus, and I found Cletus instead.
Oh well, he's the forgotten disciple, kind of like Pete Best with the Beatles.
So help me God, I saw that SUV, and I was like hurting myself trying to get a hold of my iPad to get a picture of that license plate. Because I thought he will never believe I found Cletus.
I just wonder if it was misspelled Clute.
Oh no! Yeah, I'm sure it was Clute.
And was that a Missouri tag, or was?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah, it was a Missouri tag.
Clete, Clete.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to put two E's in the middle there, because it would just be too powerful.
He couldn't spell it. Now, I had to go down to the city, and I was, like, at Southwest Boulevard and 71 Highway South when I saw him. And he was being a total jackass, weaving in and out of traffic. And finally, he just ripped right in and got in front of me, and I thought, well, thank you. Click.
Goddess of Irony, you will send an offering, right?
I did. I posted it so the whole world can
hey,
see
so
it.
Hey, so I got to ask you, have you put any thoughts into what will go into the Hooterville Holler $75 horn gift basket?
Well, I actually have, and if people are very particular about what they want, if they'll get in touch with me, I can link them to the Osceola Cheese website that lists all of their cheeses, all of their jams and jellies, all of their beef stick flavors, everything. And if they want, they can hand pick it. If they want to just tell me what they like, I'll go down and hand pick it. Lovingly pack it and send a nice snarky little note.
Magnificent. And if I was recommending, I'd let Carol pick.
I do know how to I pick good food.
You do.
It sounds delicious.
It is. It really is. Made by totally batshit crazy people, but it's really good.
And by that, you mean do they make their women wear like dresses that drag the floor and stuff like that?
Something like that.
Big old hair up to Jesus.
Yeah, the higher the hair, the closer they are to the Lord.
Amen. Well, we are also joined this evening by, for the first time, we got two first-timers in the room this evening. You, of course, can join in as well if you wish. We've been through that. But are you there, Harry?
Something happened to him, Bob.
Oh, damn.
Uh-oh.
Well, hopefully.
There he is.
Are you back, Harry?
Oh, hi, yes, I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Well, first of all, is my audio okay?
You're a little crackly.
Is that better?
We will find out in time.
Anyway, what's that?
We'll find out in time.
Okay, well, my apologies, I don't know why my Skype's a little bit flaky. It just went in and out, but if you can still hear me, and I'd stop. Thank you for that incredibly, I was really bowled over by your overly generous initial greeting. I think I've been fooling you for the last 2 years.
No, not at all. I enjoy the notes you send, the ones that I read on the air and the ones that I don't, because they always inform. I just hope your Skype and your internet connection can hold up for the sake of the conversation this evening, because I'm sure you will be a welcome addition to it.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really delighted to be here with all these other distinguished people. And as I told you, I think in an email last Saturday, the Front Porch Group last Friday saved me from being totally, utterly depressed about the elections last week.
And rightfully so, but have you ameliorated or moderated any of that malaise yet?
Yeah, well, I think I'm healing from it, but and if my audio is okay, there is actually one brief kind of actually funny Goddess of Irony story, if I can be heard.
Don't hide your light under a bushel.
Go for it.
Okay, it's a brief story, and it is probably the only, you know, as some of you, or maybe all of you know, Maryland, which is a very blue state, elected a Republican governor, which shocked everybody. It's not the first time it's happened. I mean, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, who was Robert Kennedy's daughter, she lost to a Republican, Robert Ehrlich, a number of years ago. But anyway, it was pretty shocking. But here's the funny thing, which I only found out about a few days ago. Despite our loss, the governorship to not an extreme Republican, but certainly a hardcore Republican. There were a lot of, Maryland has two, you know, legislative houses, the House of Delegates and then the State Senate. And the House of Delegates in particular, there were a number of new people elected, many of whom are in fact very progressive. And a few days later, this is what from the, what the newspaper said. There was a joint, some sort of business luncheon, Baltimore, Washington, luncheon of business leaders, and I'm not sure what it is. I couldn't find out what the who was sponsoring it. Anyway, a lobbyist from Comcast was there, and in his remarks, he basically said, and this is almost an exact quote, he said that, among other things, what he was worried about in Maryland was the fact that there were a number of new, quote, anti-business left-wing wackos who had been elected just the other day. And, of course, this, first of all, he ended up having to apologize for that, and all the delegates who were just elected wrote him a long letter and were, you know, quite disturbed about this. But here's the great thing. So he called them anti-business left-wing wackos. His name, the lobbyist name from Comcast, turns out to be, yes, it's Sean Looney.
Okay. So I was praying you were going to say it was Moran, but Looney is pretty good.
I thought Looney was pretty funny. I don't know. I thought it was hysterical, but
it is. And you may not realize this, Harry, but Looney is a very, very old colonial name. They've been around for a very, very long time.
I didn't know that, but I can imagine it is.
In fact, 75 miles from here, depending on which route one takes, one can drive past, in West Virginia, the Looneyville Post Office. It also happens to be in the same county that used to house our state-run insane asylum. The goddess of irony never takes a break.
Well, anyway, with that, I will sort of step back and let others talk quickly because the signal here is a little bit flaky.
Well, hopefully it'll stay solid enough to keep you in the group. Good evening, Sergi.
Hello. I may be shaky, too, this evening. If so, I apologize for that.
So far, your audio is pitch perfect.
And, oh, my word, Bob, that guy earlier, you know, that...
Which one?
Which one do I start with? Okay, I guess I'll start with the gun dude. It's like, you know, he sounds like, and I'm saying this as a gamer, he sounds like, kind of like the gun nut version of the basement dweller gamer type who loses his temper over something, and he starts pronouncing words with the accents on every syllable. Kroger. I'm going to go into Kroger. It just got to me so much. I was actually at the grocery. I was not at a Kroger. That would have been ironic, but I was at the grocery store when I was listening to that. I just got back. And just, I'm going to go into Kroger with my gun. And it's just like, good grief, dude, calm down.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's pronouncing punctuation, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, talking about his other hand, maybe, I mean, considering it was his right hand off the camera, the way he was speaking could also be construed as he was doing something else while saying that. He was getting a little worked up, so to speak. That's just me, though. Maybe. I'm not sure if I'm the only one who noticed that.
Getting worked up is the whole purpose. People need an alternative reality to their mundane existence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but I didn't mean worked up in that way. I meant like worked up in, he had his right hand.
Sergi, they don't call them mammosexuals for nothing.
And then as far as the dude in Lancaster, I don't want to sound weird tonight. It's like, sorry, bro, that train left the station years ago. I mean, good grief.
Well, if that's how you have to open it, you know, everybody just get out the hockey pucks and strap in.
He had me at, you can call me names.
And anyway, speaking of the this latest polar vortex, I'm not sure. Do any of y'all know what actually caused this?
Yeah, wasn't this the big ass storm up by Alaska?
Yeah, it was actually a typhoon that hit Japan, and then what was left of it went up into the Arctic Circle, pulled on that Siberian polar air, and shot it down right here into the United States. It just took a dive right down into the United States, right here in North Texas. We are on track to have the coldest November week since 1918.
And how many instances have there been thus far in North Texas, Stan Sergi, of right-wingers saying, see, there ain't no global warming?
Mercifully, very few this
really?
Time around. But it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. But, I mean, and actually, we actually do have a chance of snow here Sunday evening. And if it does snow Sunday evening, this will be the earliest snow we have had in decades.
Well, that will have to bring out the denialist booger eaters. Snow in November? See, it's like Jim Inhofe done told us, and Ted Cruz, anointed future king of America. We're having global cooling, not warming.
Oh, good grief! Yeah, I actually found the meme of it's a photo of Jon Stewart doing a face palm, and it says there is no global warming because it's cold today outside where I live, and Jon Stewart's just face palming in the picture. And whenever I see denialist stuff being posted, because I monitor the Facebook pages for the Star Telegram and the Channel 8, Channel 5, and Channel 11, not Fox 4, because I've gotten banned from Fox 4's page as for reasons, as you may have been able to guess.
Well, one wishes, never mind, we won't ask, but yeah, we can guess.
Yeah, they don't want none of them liberals up on Fox 4's page. But anyway, the others really don't really care as long as you don't, you know, post obvious illegal stuff. So, and you know, whenever anybody posts denialist crap, it's like, well, where's that global warming y'all been talking about? I just reply with that meme. Because it's so accurate, you know.
Well, right, but the answer is...
Climate's over here.
But the answer is, in Alaska, Cletus, because it's warmer there than it is in Dallas.
Exactly. That's, you know, whenever we have a polar vortex, that's the flip side of it. You know, the Earth is constantly in a balancing act. If cold air, okay, and the technical term for it is... There, polar vortex is a technical term, but the other term is called a McFarland signature. It's named after a meteorologist that graduated from A&M, who first noted the phenomenon decades ago. It's called a McFarland signature. Whenever that polar air, the jet stream buckles and polar air gets sent, you know, surging south into the U.S., you know, they're actually Havana, you know, the capital city of Cuba, has one freeze on their record, and people are always shocked to hear that. It actually has gotten to freezing. It has frosted in Cuba before because of the polar vortex. But the flip side of that is that warm tropical air gets pulled up behind the polar vortex. So that's the reason why, yes, it is currently warm in Alaska right now, unseasonably so.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious, since Typhoon Nuri pinballed off of Japan and up onto Alaska and sucked all that Arctic air out and down south, does that mean it's toasty in Siberia right now?
Not quite. Siberia, when it comes to the air masses, there is a permanent... what's called a continental polar. That's cold, bitterly cold and dry. Continental polar air mass is permanent over the pole, the North Pole, and Siberia. That's continental polar. Now, over like the coast of Alaska and off the east coast of Canada, There is maritime polar, which is less cold but still cold and moist. And what a McFarland signature does is it sucks Alaska's maritime polar into it and sucks some of Siberia's continental polar into it. That's why, Carol, you have that chance of snow. Because if it was just continental polar air, it'd be dry. There wouldn't even be clouds in the sky when the signature hits. And sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it doesn't pull the maritime air with it. But if it pulls that maritime air with it, that's pulling moisture down into the mass as well. That's the reason we have a chance of snow on Sunday.
As Sergei, I was born up in northeast Iowa, which is the southern tundra. So this weather doesn't really bother me that bad.
Yeah, Sergei,
I was just saying, your knowledge of this is just awesome. It's
well,
so impressive to me.
I have been a weather buff ever since that tornado hit downtown Fort Worth here in 2000, you know.
Ah, so, okay.
Because
see,
I remember.
This is why Sergei needs to go to meteorology school.
Well, the problem with that is you also have to study all that calculus and all that stuff, and I don't want to mess with all that. I'll stick with just being a computer tech. But I do know one thing. This polar vortex stuff, it's pretty good practice if I end up taking Mr. Vick's offer to if I end up being able to take up Mr. Vick's offer to move to Kankakee, this is good practice because there's a lot more winter up there.
Yes, well, and they're much more able to cope with it.
Oh, yeah, we actually just, after the big polar event of 2011, the Texas Department of Transportation and the, you know, several cities, you know, major cities around here decided, okay, we'll finally get some snow plows. We haven't used them since.
See, that was one of the things that first amazed me in my few little wonderful forays into northern Wisconsin and Wisconsin generally. You can be there in the winter, and the snow in the fields can be as high as a horse's head, and all the lakes are frozen solid, and people are out there running around with snowmobiles on them and fishing and building houses and whatnot. But you go down, and these are like county roads, state roads, two-lane affairs, things that would be just black ice nightmares here in Appalachistan. In what remains of good government in Wisconsin that Scott Walker hasn't already destroyed, and I'm sure he's working on the roads, it looks like a flake. I mean, it looks like a flake has never fallen. You know, it can be 10 below, and it's just, it looks like summertime driving. Everything else is snow. There ain't a damn thing on the road.
Well, the snow has to go somewhere, but, you know, it's all them socialist, you know, communist snowplows.
It's the socialist snowplows, exactly.
Yeah.
And they gotta go. Oh, by the way, since we're talking about weather, which is not the same as climate, but brings up the topic of climate, I did run across a story earlier today. And, of course, the story refers to the deal between China and the United States as a historic agreement. And I'm like, oh, really? The United States agrees to support China in building more nuclear plants. Wow, how historic. And calls it, for those who missed the other program, and at the same time calls nuclear an emission-free energy technology. Wow. Tell that to the folks in Fukushima.
But, that's not what we had here in San Onofre. We had gas escapes of nuclear waste, and they shut down the plant because of it.
Right, right. But I think we don't count those emissions. Because it's only radiation, not carbon.
But anyway, the truth of the matter.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry for interrupting. The truth of the matter, though, with nuclear is that, I mean, when it's done properly, it is somewhat better than coal and gas and such like that, because when it comes to Fukushima, yes, it was a it was, I mean, it was a disaster, but it was a pretty localized one considering they had a full meltdown. You know, it didn't irradiate the Pacific Ocean, you know, or, you know, cause a,
oh, yeah,
you know, a huge thing like that, you know.
What is it, millions of gallons of radiated water being dumped into the Pacific on a daily basis from Fukushima?
They're reading radiation 100 miles out of Eureka now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you think about how much, yeah, I mean, millions of gallons, that is a lot, but I mean, how much water is in the ocean? I mean, it does get diluted, you know.
Sergi is taking the scientific side. We read both sides here. Because we're concerned about radiation coming from Japan. So I don't know the answer because I've read both sides in my resources.
Well, the problem with nuclear, and Sergi points us toward it, is that it has to have all these conditions precedent in front of it, like when done properly. When done properly is a big, big, big conditional when you're talking about nuclear fission. Because when done improperly, really bad things happen.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't dispute that at all. I mean, the worst, you know, nuclear disaster in world history, you know, Chernobyl, that was caused because they, you know, them being, you know, the Soviets, they decided, hey, let's do some experiment. They, you know, disabled a lot of the safety mechanisms to try and increase the power output of the plant. Caused a huge, huge radiation release, you know. But I mean, when it comes to Fukushima, you know, I mean, no one's actually died from the radiation. You know, the people that have died in relation to Fukushima died from either the tsunami or damage caused by the earthquake.
Can I give you the problem we had with the San Onofre plant here?
Sure.
When just before they shut it down, they. Remember when the U.S. said you have to move outside of a 50-mile radius of the Fukushima plant? Do you remember that?
Yes.
The U.S. government ordered all Americans to go outside of a 50-mile zone. And it's called, I think the word, I could be wrong, is induction zone. And when we had the problem with San Onofre, the local paper published a map of our induction zone here, and it covered tens of millions of people. Including our house, where Lori and I live. And the thing is, you know, when we bought our house, we bought fire insurance. We bought earthquake insurance. There was no nuclear meltdown insurance. And it was because so many people were at risk, is I believe that's why steps were taken to shut down that plant. Tens of millions of people. So that was my problem with it. I couldn't buy an insurance policy to cover my risk.
No, an insurance company would be crazy to write that policy, Lance.
Okay. Because it goes, and then they got, I forget the number of how many people are in that 50-mile induction zone.
Well, right, and the reason an insurance company would be crazy to write that policy is because all insurance is based upon risk and risk assessment and percentage of likelihood of, I mean, when you buy insurance, it's a really gross gamble you're taking with the life insurance company. You're saying to the insurance company, hey, sucker, I bet I die before I'm 60. And the insurance company's saying, ah, we bet you're not. You know, you wind up rooting for the insurance company in that instance.
Yeah,
but
term life.
But in the case of a nuclear power plant in an area where there are millions of human beings, an insurance company actuary would look at the executives and go, are you crazy? You can't write that policy because this is not a matter of if, but when.
Right. Exactly. And the thing, Bob, is that the power plant's on the coast down behind some hills. We don't see it where we are. And we're in the heart of Orange County, which is huge. And you don't see the plant because it's down on the coast past the hills. So you don't think about it. But we're within 50 miles. So I'm glad that they shut it down. It was one of the best things to happen around
right.
here
well,
a long
and,
time.
And please remember, that this is a story I've told in the past, but it bears repeating. I grew up within, I think, 18 miles of what was at the time, during the height of the Cold War, the largest single nuclear reactor in the world at a place called the Browns Ferry Nuclear Power Plant, part of the TVA system. And they used to have these funny little signs along the road that said Browns Ferry Evacuation Route. And everybody just laughed. Because, I mean, and that wasn't that populous a region. But nobody's going to get away because the Browns Ferry Evacuation Route went right by Browns Ferry. So, duh. But Browns Ferry, of course, nearly melted down. Nearly, because they started a fire that got out of control there, and it was started by a maintenance technician, as it was reported then, who was looking for gas leaks in gas lines around the reactor, and he was looking for them. Remember the men's rights guys back in the previous hour who were talking about how, you know, men get it right. Don't need those women's. Well, one of those men's getting it right was looking for gas leaks around a nuclear reactor with a candle.
Oh, God.
He found one.
It's no different than your...
He was really using a candle.
Yes.
Oh, good God.
It's no different than the freedom thing that you had. Go into the river.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And... the big revelation on this one for us was they have sirens and stuff down in San Clemente, where the plant is. In fact, they mail people pills, iodine pills. They send it out to those people, but there's no sirens up here. That was the big revelation. It wasn't just people in San Clemente down behind the hills that were at risk. It was all of us up here in the entire Orange County, California.
Isn't it hilariously ironic that you're talking about nuclear warnings to what was once known as Nixon's Western White House?
Deliciously ironic.
May I read a little? This is a little excerpt from Rational Wiki on the Fukushima incident.
Okay.
Says, looking at it realistically, the nuclear plant was hit by one of the biggest earthquakes in recent times and a 15-meter-high tsunami. That it didn't outright explode, that there are no deaths attributed to radiation as of yet. There were two deaths from the tsunami and one had a heart attack. And that the release of radiation was both relatively small and local is testament to the robustness of even old 70s-era nuclear reactors in their housing. Instead of asking why are we building dangerous nuclear power plants, the question really should be, why are we putting them in geologically unstable areas without making sure they can withstand the conditions they could experience there?
And, of course, we have done that all over the United States, have we not? Is San Onofre not just camped out right near the San Andreas Fault?
Absolutely. It's Long Beach Newport Fault is the closest fault. And it's moved. We've been here 30 years. It does move on occasion, believe me. And, they have another one up north in Northern California. It's also near faults.
Well, it's not in Northern California. It's in San Bernardino County.
Oh, what's the name of it?
Diablo County.
Diablo. Aren't there earthquake faults near Diablo?
Yeah, it's
Sparky.
I think it's close to the San Andreas.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
See, I'm California ignorant. Y'all have lots of faults out there, but for me, they're all San Andreas. It's kind of like
what?
It's kind of like down south when you order a pop, the server will come to you and go, and what would you like to drink? And you say Coke, and they say orange or grape or 7-Up or Dr. Pepper. and you say, oh, Coca-Cola. Oh, okay, Coca-Cola. It's all San Andreas. It's all San Andreas to me.
The two nuke plants were in the real Northern California closed down. Humboldt Bay closed down a long time ago. Mm. And Rancho Seco closed down, 20 years ago or so. And then they built a big gas-fired plant out at Rancho Seco, and they got a big solar array out there. And then the Sacramento SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, just finished, I mean, the wind farm at Loma Vista finished, and there's like 700 wind turbines out there.
See, that's the part
they don't kill you.
That's the part I like. I was on. I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I joined a wonderful talk host in Richmond, Virginia, earlier today on WLEE AM 990, a fellow by the name of Jack Gravely. And we had a wonderful conversation, and of course a right-winger called up because we were talking about coal. And he said, it's you radicals that are going to destroy America. And he went on and said, you want to get rid of coal, but this wind and this solar, it don't even work yet.
I watched the wind farm being built outside Palm Springs, you know. They, because we have a little place up in the high desert we go to. And the first, they built like one crazy-looking vertical kind of thing that spun around on a vertical axis. That was the first thing they did out there on that piece of empty desert, Mojave. And then before you know it, 10 years later, hundreds and hundreds of huge turbines. And if it didn't work, they wouldn't be doing it. Let's put it that way.
Right. They're not in the pinwheel business.
No.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? I've been somewhat negligent here. We went through
you
and
forgot
talked.
The gizmo line.
I forgot the gizmo line. Hey, good evening.
You talking to me, huh?
I'm talking to you, Bill.
Yeah, good evening, folks.
Hi, Bill.
I'm just going to use that. Hi, you guys are talking weather. November of 1950, this city that I'm sitting in, we had 24 inches of snow in 24 hours. And this city shut down. The only thing I can remember were National Guard tanks dragging sleds full of milk to local stores. The only thing running was the streetcars because they had two work vehicles that could keep the tracks clean. And they were working, but everything else was, I mean, that's a lot of snow inside of, and, you know, we didn't have the amount of cars that we have today, but still. This city really went into shutdown. The weatherman used to drag it out every year. He'd drag out kinescopes of that storm because it was, I was only 7 years old, but it was a monster. And I don't know, we got hit hard today. We got a truck turned over on 90, a couple of semis are tipped over, and I could walk to Lake County quicker than I could drive there today. And while I heard the radio reports for, don't bother. And so we're getting bombed. I mean, it's pretty heavy. And I say, just when you're a little 7-year-old kid, 24 inches of snow, man, I try to walk in that stuff, and have to send the same burnout out. And I wish they'd send one with a keg of brandy. But yeah,
at
that's
7,
the
Bill?
Story here.
At 7?
What?
At 7? A keg
of
brandy?
Years old, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah, I got an early start, you know. By the time I was 15, you had to fill it with Thunderbird, though. You know, that's what we were drinking. Connoisseurs of the grape, you know.
Oh, exactly. You know, if the boys under the bridge can't open the screw top, I don't want to drink it.
Well, they also would pass it around. Because I had two neighborhood friends that were men who had fought in Korea. And they were like 24, 25, you know. And they were interesting to listen to, and they'd take that bottle and they put the bottom of the hand on it and move it around, and then they drink. They were cleaning it up between people using it, you know, which is kind of that is funny at the same time, you know. Usually made it safer by doing that, cleaner. Anyway, that's my story. Is weather, yeah, and I've seen a lot up here. Because there's something about lake effect snow, and Sergey probably could figure that one out and tell me what that's about. But lake effect, I basically know what it is. When Erie is open, the wind comes across, picks up moisture, and then it dumps it. Sheridan, Ohio is a very high place. It's real high territory, and man, when they get hit, they get hit. So it's pretty nasty around here. I don't have to go anywhere. It's a dry walk between here and the men's room. You know, I can make it to that, no problem. So, Yeah, I was out this morning, but it was nicer. I bought one of those masks, you know, one of those warm air masks. Number one, those masks, somebody already told me to improve my looks 100%, so I use that. But anyway, that's my story about weather. Yeah, I've seen it that bad before. You guys in California, but you got another problem. We get too much water, and you guys ain't getting enough.
And yeah, we're thirsty out here. We're thirsty.
Go ahead. Why don't we shut up? What am I? Let me go get that mouthwash here. I don't know.
Yeah, there's another well, really well drilling rig in the neighborhood pounding away today.
On a panic well?
I don't know yet until you go by there and see it capped. But my neighbor's panic well looks really nice.
I'm still
sitting on two salt mines here.
The concept of whales.
Pardon?
I didn't catch that.
Sergey, what'd you say about wells?
I was just saying, I'm still trying to, wrap my head around the concept of wells, because, I've been a kid of the urban suburbs all of my life, and, to me, water, I just turn on the faucet and it comes out. It comes from the city.
No. Okay, what's a panic well?
Well, there's three of them, four of them in the neighborhood right now that I know of. They haven't tapped them yet. They had them drilled, but they haven't put a pump in them. They're all submersible pumps. They have to put the pump in and, get the electric wiring out to it to make the pump run, and then you have to set up the pressure tank.
Yeah, but why the term panic?
Well, the well driller's been working around the neighborhood for over a year.
Okay.
So it just seems like it goes from one place to the next, and you don't know if they're using the well or not. I mean, my other neighbor had a well put in last year because he couldn't get enough water out of his well to water all his trees and stuff, and he had some plans, and he just thought he'd go deeper. So
you in a rural area?
Yes, I'm in a rural area.
Whereabouts, may I ask?
In Red Bluff, California.
Oh, Red Bluff, yeah. I'm a graduate of UC Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had an uncle who lived probably about 10 miles from where I am now, but they didn't have city water yet. And this was in the late 40s, early 50s. He was using well water. And I remember my cousins telling me they had to use about 2 inches of water in the bathtub when they took a bath because they had to keep the well. But that well was still pumping. But the city had come through with city water, but that well was still working. And we're talking about the 50s, the 60s, it was still working. And he still had coal furnace. And I was working on my car one time when an old guy pulls up in a truck that was so rattle-trapped, and he was delivering coal. And I hadn't seen that done in I can't tell you how long. That people were getting coal delivered to them and complaining. One of the first complaints or first thing I ever heard about coal was a bunch of the adults in the family. I'm about 5 years old, and they're all talking around, talking, griping about the price of a ton of coal. So, and I guess, Bob, they weren't, that price of that ton of coal, they weren't paying that much to the guys who were digging it, huh?
Not so much.
A guy risking his life for this shit. I think it's time that we should move on, But of course, the frackers too. A friend of mine signed up to let them frack her property. They pay her half the money, and then when they were due to pay the other half, they backed out of paying the other half. She had to hire a lawyer to go after them. The same bunch of honest bastards that ran the Gilded Age, the same bunch. The thing never changes. They just don't use, as Pretty Boy Floyd would say, that these guys are Well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a peep, and here's $100 for the people on release. That was a Woody Guthrie song. I don't know if anybody's ever heard it beside me in the world, but it was a Pretty Boy Floyd.
Anyhow, Sparky added me in, and I was out in the barn doing some wood lathe work and listening to the Nuclear Power Number. When you start talking about the net carbon on a nuclear power plant, I've never been able to find out how much carbon is released from the burning of the fossil fuel that's required to build the plant or to decommission it.
Well,
now,
see,
I'm not
there's
arguing,
that. No.
I'm not arguing the fact that when you're generating the electricity, there's no carbon emission. But there is a tremendous volume of carbon emitted when you build it and when you dismantle it.
I take no issue with that whatsoever. And of course that's the sort of thing that needs to be done, because you can't look by that measure, and I'm okay with this, Roger. Because I think we have to calculate carbon emissions as carbon emissions. You know, you have to take into account the amount of carbon that has to be emitted to erect a wind turbine, or to install solar panels, or
no argument. But the amount of carbon that's required to create all the cement and haul in all the rock and all the aggregate and haul it and make the steel and all the rest of it, the closest I have found is that a nuclear plant has to run for 20 years before the energy produced by the plant covers the energy cost of fossil fuel to build it and create it.
And isn't that about the effective life of one anyway?
Yeah, they only license them for 20 years at a time, and this is why all your power companies want to relicense their plants after the 20-year, quote, lifespan. And that was what really killed the Humboldt Bay plant right here. I live close to Eureka, California. And it was the earthquake fault and da-da-da-da-da-da and close to the bay and all kinds of other stuff. But PG&E had not yet recouped on the cheap energy produced the cost of building the plant.
Right, and see, what you point out there is the problem with a lot of these hydrocarbon schemes, and nuclear too. You know, these the amount of energy required to turn tar sands goop into oil or gasoline is tremendous. Back when they were trying to sell the coal to liquid boondoggle here in Appalachia, you know, it was going to require the wasting of 7 gallons of water for every gallon of liquid coal. And it required a tremendous, tremendous outlay of energy to produce it. And then there is, and this is important because it's included in the history groundbreaking deal between America and China BS, the billions of dollars that will be spent on carbon capture and sequestration. Now, granted, China's burning a lot of coal, and they have, they have, I suppose, a significant interest in seeing if they can make it work. But again, what we said about nuclear power is the same thing you say about carbon sequestration, if it's done right. And under the best of circumstances, if carbon capture and sequestration is done right, then it is a net energy loser. And then you still have to worry about making carbon dioxide behave not like the gas that it naturally is at normal temperatures. You know, how much energy would go?
China is using about, I don't know, what, 700 million people to capture a whole bunch of the particulate matter in their lungs, and then they bury it in the graveyard.
Well, that's another form of it now, isn't it? Precisely. But carbon capture and storage, or sequestration, as it's described, it's on a par, as far as I'm concerned, with the Philosopher's Stone, the universal solvent, transmuting lead into gold, because carbon. Okay, so I guess you're gonna what? Under the best of circumstances, your end product isn't gonna be carbon dioxide. You're gonna in the further sequestration process, what? You're going to sequester the oxygen out of the carbon, and you're just going to wind up with underground stores full of carbon? Well, in that case, well, I guess those are little Keebler coal elves putting more coal under the ground, isn't it? Because if you got a bunch of carbon laying under the ground, isn't some asshole coal executive going to want to burn it somewhere?
My understanding from my daughter-in-law, who is much more knowledgeable about this stuff than I am, is that the organisms that took the carbon out of dinosaurs and trees and all the rest of that, the microbes that worked on all that, are now extinct on the Earth. So even if you can manage to bury this stuff, the organisms that transformed the organic matter into coal no longer exist on planet Earth.
Well, I learned, like I said, that's why I love doing this, because I learn something new every day. That kind of makes sense.
I can't verify the truth of that. I have to believe my daughter-in-law.
It's my understanding that what they're looking for in the CCS boondoggle is a chemical means, and I kind of wish Waggy was around here for this. The chemical means of taking of breaking a CO2 molecule down. And you've got the oxygen and then the carbon, which is the problem. You just stick it somewhere, because otherwise, if you just wind up with CO2 and you start, I mean, what? They're just going to pump it underground and keep it under pressure and trust that humanity's going to trundle along, and we're never going to have any technological breakdowns, which seem to happen every couple of thousand years to humanity, and everything's going to be okay, because the idea that a bunch of underground CO2 might someday get loose, I mean, let's say that CCS becomes a going concern. Well, what happens if somewhere down the road the system fails and the atmosphere starts becoming bombarded with massive CO2 releases? You can't do this unless you can break the CO2 into its component parts of carbon and oxygen. And if you're down to carbon again,
somebody's going to want to recombine it. Now, this also sounds a whole lot like the methane that's in the tundra. As it warms up, is going to pop out, and methane's a much worse greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide.
Well, there you go.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up, Roger. I was out at the Red Bluff, Tama County landfill the other day, and they got a methane gas burner out there.
They have them here for you.
Well, now, Sparky, the thing there is that all these dumps that were created back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s are now emitting methane from the decomposition. And so they put a impermeable barrier over the top, bleed out some of the oxygen, and they're putting power plants on the old garbage dumps burning the methane, which I guess is better than letting the methane escape, but you're still making the carbon dioxide when you burn the methane.
Exactly.
We're going to need a bigger planet.
They built a new plant so close to, I was living in Mentor, and my house was on the lake. I could throw a rock into their lake from my house and my backyard, and you look up the lake, you look east, and there's two twin towers from a nuclear plant that was built during my lifetime, my adulthood. And what I remember about building it was the guys that were working there were selling stainless steel belt buckles, because, as you guys probably know, you use stainless steel pipe in those places. And of course, when I see these guys go out to lunch and go back to stagger, and I often wondered, I hope their welding still was working when they were in that condition, you know? But anyway, I've seen one up close, Perry Nuclear Plant, is what it's called, and it's working quite well, but the problem is, when's it going to stop working, and then what do you do with it? And what do you do with the waste?
And Bill, that's the problem with all of these intensive these maintenance-intensive technologies.
Yeah.
I mean, look at something as seemingly non-complex as a dam. I mean, you know, not far from me is a dam that is made up of earth and rock, and it dams the Gauley, G-A-U-L-E-Y, river. There's lots of earthen dams damming up lots of rivers all over this country. And who knows how long they'll hold.
Well, it's one that let go and chance down PA found out about it.
Well, exactly. And how about the people in Buffalo Creek, West Virginia in 1972? And remember, there are 100 of these earthen dams that are holding back, there are dozens of these earthen dams holding back at least 100 billion gallons of toxic waste in West Virginia alone. Okay? And then there are the earthen dams that hold back coal ash that are usually situated right by rivers. And all of these things are dependent on being properly maintained by companies whose only goal is profit. And every penny that's put into maintenance of these structures is money that isn't going into shareholders' dividends. And the indictment of Don Blankenship centers on this concept. You know, cited inside the indictment, and it reads like a crime thriller, because it is. I recommend people go and read it. You can go to the Department of Justice website and drill down until you find the WVS, West Virginia Southern District, and you can read the indictment, and it's horrifying, and it's brutal. This guy was, Don Blankenship at one point was sending one of his underlings, whom he felt like was not working hard enough to move coal and make profits, because the Upper Big Branch mine was one of the most profitable mines that they had. Because it was producing metallurgical coal, which was then being exported for use in China, and metallurgical coal commands a much higher per ton price. Well, he sent one example that's cited in the indictment is a message, a note that he sent to an underling saying, "You got kids to feed, don't you? You best work harder." And there was another one that said, "I can Khrushchev your ass. You get my meaning?" In other words, bypass safety, bypass everything, make money. And then there's the famous memo that he once wrote, and he was a big memo sender, you know, because he's a micromanager and a sociopath, where he said, if you ain't moving coal, if you ain't running coal, you ain't working. Work like you mean it. And, of course, it leads to 29 people being incinerated, and two other people at the Arakoma mine, et cetera. But these processes require profit-driven corporations to actually give a damn about their structures, when in fact their accounting departments factor in, when they plan a mine, they factor in that they will be fined X amount of dollars because of the laws they plan in advance to violate. And so somewhere out there, there's an accountant inside Alpha Natural Resources who has figured out the amount of money they'll have to pay when that earthen dam breaks and they kill a few thousand people because a wall of toxic waste 50 feet high has roared down the Coal River Valley from the Brushy Fork impoundment. They factor this stuff in. Not, and it goes back to what I said earlier, not if, but when.
I got to jump in here for just a minute. When corporations were first allowed in the United States of America, they were formed to create a specific project and then dissolved. So if you needed to build a bridge across the creek to get to the town down there, a company would form, they'd build the bridge, and then the company would dissolve. And it was for the betterment of society. And then when the railroads got going, they decided that this one project number had to kind of fall apart, but corporations were still supposed to provide benefit for society. And over the course from about 1830, corporations are now not to benefit society, they're only to benefit shareholders. And during the Reagan administration, it became the requirement of the board of directors of any corporation to maximize shareholder value, not to provide a service to the populace.
Yeah,
that is where we have screwed up.
The board has a fiduciary duty to maximize profit, and that's why you've got these benefit corporation concept that's on the rise now. And see, a lot of that change came around, Roger, because of a very few simple words. A corporate charter used to specifically list what it was that the corporation was set out to do. You're absolutely correct. Or if they wanted to do two or three things, it would list the two or three things, or 15 things, whatever. Somewhere along the way, some wise lawyer, too smart for his own good, added the phrase, and other lawful purposes. And the barn door was open. Because, you know, let's say you set out to manufacture buggy whips, but the arrival of the automobile means that nobody needs buggy whips anymore. Well, okay, so your corporate charter doesn't say that you're going to manufacture transmission case. Okay, car horns. Thank you, that's very good. But because you've got and other lawful purposes tucked in at the bottom of your charter, you don't have to go out of business as Amalgamated Buggy Whip and then go through the process of starting Amalgamated Car Horn. You just keep doing it. You just change your company name to Amalgamated Car Horn, and legally you're still Amalgamated Buggy Whip Inc. DBA Amalgamated Car Horn. Neat, huh? We're Beatrice. So, it's part of the problem. It's definitely part of the problem. The profit motive, though, that inhabits capitalism is the part of the problem. You know, I posted something on Facebook last night. I found that photograph of Don Blankenship standing in front of a huge American flag, wearing an American flag shirt and an American flag ball cap, and grinning like something out of a Warner Brothers cartoon. And I wrote this little essay. And at the end of the essay, I wrote the following. I'll just pull it up real quick.
Was excellent.
You read it? Yeah, you did. You did.
Oh, yeah.
Because you liked it. Yeah. But at the end, where is it? In fact, Carol reposted it on her page. Thank you, Carol.
I'm a giver.
Yes, you are. Here we go. It's pretty harsh, the piece that I wrote is, but I also think it's truthful. But I concluded the thing saying, this is the ultimate brutality, the deepest indignity of the coal industry. Unsatisfied with stealing an entire region's wealth, coal barons like Don Blankenship, Chris Klein, Bob Murray, and Jim Justice, as well as the generations of carbon predators before them, have smiled their winning smiles as they destroyed the very people who made them rich. Unwilling to stand alone with their cannibalism, they've passed the haunch to people who could either eat it or starve, and eat they have. In some cases, they've even developed a taste for it. Such people call themselves the friends of coal. We don't have a word to describe this kind of hateful misanthropy. We don't make it something civil society abhors as we do with murder or burglary or arson or rape. Instead, we call it economics and capitalism and free enterprise and laud the cannibal priests for their skill in laying a bloody table. And while I was writing about the coal industry, the fact of the matter is, it is applicable as well to capitalism generally. Because the whole point, the whole insidious beauty, if you will, of capitalism is that it involves everyone. We are all participants in a process that is destructive of every last one of us. Sorry, I'll get off the soapbox now.
Oh, it's accurate. It's look at the car company. They calculate how many people are going to die as part of their expense.
Yeah, cost-benefit analysis, sure.
Exactly.
Speaking of cost-benefit analysis, I need to get this in here because we're 20 minutes past the third hour of the program. And so far, the only person stepping up this evening has been Thomas, our dear friend Jug of Punch. And we've still got $170 to go to finish out the week at our ordinary fundraising goal. And starting Monday in a hole is going to suck. But no, please continue, Lance.
Oh, just, I guess I, you know, I don't really have never thought deeply. You get the same kind of imbalances in socialism or in China or anywhere you go. And the problem is that the people with the money have the wherewithal to hire the attorneys to jigger up the law to screw us. And they're doing it as we speak. They never stop. I know, because I fought some development stuff here locally in Newport Beach that was changed in Sacramento, and the attorneys slipped that new law in so they could screw us over here in Newport Beach. And it never stops. That's the problem, is it's a full-time job just trying to keep up with what they're doing. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, the problem is a lot of what they own is politicians.
Of course.
That's where the problem comes in, for sure. They'll spend any amount of money on anybody or anything as long as it's going right back in their pockets.
Right.
Well, I got to agree with Bill. Think about any environmental battle, whether it's keeping a dam out of a canyon, whether it's preserving farmland, whether it's doing any of those kinds of things. You can fight it, take it to court, to appeal it to the Board of Supervisors, file lawsuits, do all that. And every time an environmentalist wins, it's not over. But when the developer wins,
it's
over. And they make all the money. And
that's
anybody
right.
who files the, and I've done this repeatedly, the appeal to the Board of Supervisors, file the lawsuit on the California Environmental Quality Act, whatever. You win, and you don't get any return. You've just done a good deed for society. But the developer will come back 2-3 years later and come up with another plan that you have to fight again. And when the developer wins one time, they make enough money to pay for all the fights before. But when the environmentalist wins, they get a pat on the back, thank you for saving the valley. Thank you for saving Hetch Hetchy's long gone. But, but any time you fight an environmental battle, you never win. All you've done is postpone another fight.
Well, there's
and
a cap.
That's what pisses me off about the capitalist system.
Well, Roger, isn't hello, folks.
Hi, Larry.
Roger. Isn't that the way it is with most of these fights, when a progressive force or when somebody who's been maltreated by the major institutions in the society, when they go up against one of these corporate groups, this kind of thing happens? It's something that happens all the time. It's predictable. And I can understand why you would be angry, Roger. And I would be angry too. It's maddening.
It's not that I'm angry. It's a fact of life.
And but Roger, Daddy. Roger, there's a caveat to what you've described, because and I know a little bit about this because we see it at work here in West Virginia. When a coal company, for instance, puts in a mountaintop removal site, like I said, their accountants factor in that they're going to break the laws. And they're going to break the laws. They know they're going to break the laws. They mean to break the laws. I've heard a Department of Environmental Protection lawyer, and the West Virginia DEP might as well be lawyers for the company, okay? I heard one of those stand up in open court one time and say, well, Your Honor, if we obeyed all the laws about clean water, we'd never be able to mine coal in West Virginia. Okay? I mean, it's a fact. But what happens is there are statutes.
And at that point, at that point, the coal company should have been put out of business.
But that's not how the structure works. It's part of the way, even this is part of the way that the game is rigged, okay? If you violate the Clean Water Act, okay? If you violate your section 404 permit and you've got a discharge, or if you violate 402, there are things called 402 suits. And the Sierra Club, bless their hearts, have sponsored a whole bunch of them in West Virginia. What happens is you get busted for poisoning, let's say, putting a bunch of selenium into a stream. And, you know, it's just there. So then, and it's very much like Kabuki theater, I guess. That's the anyway, maybe it's not. But so the Sierra Club will sponsor a lawyer group, and the lawyer group will go in and they'll file a lawsuit against the coal company over these discharges. And I'm echoing. Hopefully it's gone. Good. And the coal company will go, yep, we sure did. And the court will say, okay, there's no need to try this case. We're not going to waste the court's time trying this case. We're going to enter into an agreed order, a settlement agreement. And the coal company says, yep, we sure are. And the lawyers for the Sierra Club say, yep, we sure are. And they enter into an agreed order whereby the company agrees to pay without fighting a some certain fine into the Treasury of the United States as a fine for violations of the Clean Water Act. Alongside,
and enough to pay the lawyers.
And they that's the thing. And the statute also contains a provision for attorney's fees. So the lawyers that have been funded by the Sierra Club get paid. The community stays poisoned. The coal company kind of has to sort of maybe mitigate and put in some stuff to maybe keep from putting more stuff into the water that they could have put in the first place, but didn't, because it's cheaper to pay the settlement and then put in the thing later than to put in the thing on the front end and spend all that money up front. See how their thinking works?
But and put in that thing on every other plant they have.
Which well, they no, won't do.
Which is why they pay the settlement fee, because it's cheaper than putting in the remediation number on every single mine. Because, well, they're only going to catch 2% of our mines.
There you go.
Well, they do the same thing with the ADA, with the Americans with Disabilities Act. What the company will say is they'll say, look, if we get fined, it's cheaper for us to pay the fine and not obey the law, and we'll just wait until a bunch of people with disabilities decide to sue us. But up until that time, we'll just go on not obeying the law. And that's what, I don't know if that's exactly similar. The other thing, I know we're talking about the coal companies, but Roger, we had two bills. We had two propositions on our ballot this last time, and I don't know why Wes Chesbrough's argument didn't get out there about Proposition 1 or about Proposition 2, but those lost big time. So maybe you can explain why our state is so, they certainly didn't support the environmental position this time around.
Well, it has to do with the voters in L.A. can do whatever the F they want anywhere in the state, because that's where the power is.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, Roger's going over the state of Jefferson.
No, I'm not quite at the state of Jefferson.
Get out those double X's.
Although it would have been fun to see it on the ballot.
Well, the larger takeaway from all of this is that when they do get busted, when they get busted, they enter into these settlement agreements, understand the community gets nothing. The poisoned community gets nothing. The people whose waters were poisoned get nothing. The federal government gets a little fine paid to it, and that just goes, it just disappears into the treasury. Now, they got creative with one of these things, and they set up a legal clinic for this sort of stuff up at West Virginia University's College of Law. But we still get nothing.
Turn the light on.
And by the way, hey, Bill, are you still there on the gizmo line?
Yeah.
Listen, if you don't care, I had somebody beep in at one point. Would you mind letting somebody onto the gizmo line for a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I'll give it up gladly and listen. And, folks, talk to you some other time.
All right, you have a great weekend, and stay warm above all things.
Yeah, I'm doing that. I'm sitting here with skiers. I wear skiers underwear for a shirt around here. They're polypropylene, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, you can't beat that. That'll keep you warm.
That's beautiful stuff, yeah.
Night, Bill.
See you, Bill. So,
hey, Bill.
So, Just so folks can know, the Gizmo line is open. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. And big thanks going out to Glenn and to Terrace. We've gone from $170 to go for fundraising this evening down to $110. So hopefully $110 will be doable in the next 30 minutes or so. I'm sorry for the interruption.
Hey, Roger, I got a my letter from the Selective Service System this week.
Oh, did you?
Good.
It was so personalized. I felt like they were talking to me. It started, "Dear Sir or Madam."
the warm and personal touch.
Wasn't that lovely? The standby local boards are at the heart of the revitalized Selective Service System and a very critical element in our national preparedness mission. Thank you for your interest in serving as a member of a Selective Service local board in your state. We are constantly recruiting individuals to fill openings in the local boards. There are no present vacancies in your county, therefore we cannot use your immediate services. Openings can arise at any time, so if you wish to resubmit your information at a later date, we encourage you to do so. Your willingness to serve as a volunteer local board member is very much appreciated. Sincerely, John J. Wilbur, Regional Director. So they're constantly recruiting individuals, but I have to keep applying.
Well, apparently then you have a full Selective Service Board, which is very unlike here in Northern California, where there's supposed to be 5 people on the board here in Eureka, and there's only 3, and there's 2 vacancies. So if you were to live here, they would appoint you immediately.
And I'm the voice of paranoia for the program here. They just happen to know who that Baker woman is.
I think that's probably closer to the truth.
Come on, Schwarzenegger never would have appointed me if he knew who I was.
Big state. It's bigger than Hooterville.
It's a lot bigger than Hooterville. And speaking of Hooterville, and not to change the subject, because you guys are talking about something that's very important, and I'm learning a lot, but I did want to point out that we all kind of need to brace ourselves for what's coming down in St. Louis County here very shortly, and I'm sure of it. The governor held a press conference the other day with a rack of police officers behind him, letting the wrong colors know that he's not going to tolerate their violent activity. And he's called out 1,000 National Guards and recruited all these police officers from area police departments. And in the same breath, they say, oh, we have no idea when they're going to hand down that no bill indictment, you know, because they're not going to indict him.
No.
And it's clear that somebody knows that they're not going to indict him. They've waited, and I have said all along they were going to wait until it got really, really cold. So I'm guessing probably Monday.
Well, yeah, I don't know why they called up National Guard. They got the KKK coming out.
Yes, and that was another thing, was the KKK is passing out these flyers all over St. Louis County to let people know that, you know, they're not going to tolerate the violent, you know, these wrong colors want to kill you. And they'll be out there, quote, masquerading as peaceful protesters. And so they're getting ready to play skeet shoot on the black community. Now, the governor has said nothing about it. No St. Louis County official has said anything about it. I heard one police officer on who was being interviewed on MSNBC, and he mumbled a mealy-mouthed, "It's not helpful."
And let's remember that Jay Nixon is, contrary to his last name, actually supposed to be a Democrat, right?
Okay. He was, in all fairness, he was the Attorney General for the state of Missouri for like 4 or 5 terms. So he's a big law enforcement guy. And he's seen as tough on crime and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So he's going to side with the cops no matter what. But it's going to get ugly, and somebody's going to die, and I'm ready for it, and I'm not going back. Because I'm just a big, old, chicken. Well, actually, I'm not, because I went in the first place, but I find it extraordinarily disturbing that the Klan can act in this way. The black community has said and done really nothing. I mean, they have been very quietly protesting and not causing any problems. And all you hear from the racists or about how the wrong colors were out there burning and looting. Hey, you know, I'm sorry, but when I was there, the only people I saw burning and looting were skinheads with a vehicle that had Illinois plates on it who were out there trying to incite a race war. And the only people who got hurt were the people in the black community who, and I'm not saying none of them did it, and I'm not saying that I don't think that violence is the answer. I don't think that burning down your neighborhoods are the answer, but truthfully, people who are in a situation where they feel like they have nothing to lose will respond in what the average American would consider a socially unacceptable way. But when they're desperate and they feel like they need to be heard, they're going to do things. And I'm sorry, I remember driving down the Dan Ryan Expressway in Chicago, watching Chicago burn. So it's coming. It's coming down the pike.
Well, I'd like to amplify on what Carol just said. In the 1970s, early 70s, 1970 actually, April 1970, I'd gotten out of the service, was very involved in the anti-Vietnam War protest, all the rest of it, was very involved in the big protest that happened in San Francisco, and the incredible percentage, high percentage, of the people that were doing the protests were peaceful redress of grievances to the government. And there were a few, quote, anarchist, unquote, type, who were, oh, we got to take over the other side of the street. Screw the permit. Da 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 da. And if you look into the SDS organization, the people who were pushing for the violence turned out to be part of the Contemplo or something like that. They were saboteurs.
Yeah, COINTELPRO.
In the organization. And I think this whole thing in Ferguson is the same thing. The people of Ferguson are simply trying to do peaceful redress of grievance. And the tipping over of cars and the throwing bricks through store windows and all the rest of the crap that goes on.
That's for white kids are after football games.
Saboteurs.
I kind of half agree with that. While I do not doubt that there were just honest to good, well, not honest to goodness, but you know, 100% genuine, you know, locals who saw an opportunity to just, you know, burn and loot and act like animals. I do have to half agree though that some of them, I mean, I wouldn't put it past the St. Louis County, you know, government or the state or, you know, the cities or whatever to, you know, pay members of, you know, local gangs or whatever to incite that stuff to make it look like it's, you know, more violent than it really would have been otherwise.
Carl Rove and Koch brothers.
Sergi, I can't prove it, so that if I say that, I sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Well,
do I
mean,
believe in
some,
my heart that's true? I do.
Well, I mean, some you know, conspiracy theories do have, you know, they do have merit because things like that have a history. I mean, there are proven cases here in the United States where governments have, you know, governments or private entities have paid, you know, provocateurs to infiltrate protests and start looting, start burning, start destroying stuff just to try and make the, you know, just so that the media can turn around and create this narrative of, and, you know, have the, you know, video clips of the big bad black men running out of, you know, a shoe store with their arms full of, you know, Nikes, you know, it's, I wouldn't put it past them, you know.
And go, you know, back to General Strike San Francisco, 1936, 1935, 1936. That was a Pinkerton-inspired riot on the waterfront in San Francisco.
Yes.
Roger, were you on Geary Avenue on Moratorium Day?
Yes.
So was I.
I was a... I got down there early because I took the bus down and went to the training and became one of the moderators, quasi-official part of the whole damn thing. And then I raised money out in Golden Gate Park by selling joints at a buck apiece.
Oh, I think I had one. Hey, remember how the platform was taken over by somebody there once we reached the park?
Not directly. It's been a long time.
Well, I do. Some group took over the platform, and we didn't get anything about the war or anything. Anyway, those are old times. I just thought I'd share it with you.
No, I was there on Geary Street, and I still have a picture somewhere of a newspaper or something with that picture from up by the Sears store.
Yeah.
Shooting back down Geary, and it's people all the way from...
That's right.
The old Sears store all the way down. And then there was another one from a little further out, somewhere around 20th Avenue or something, looking back up Geary, and it's full of people.
Yep.
Geary Street is a six-lane thoroughfare now, and it was then. And the permit allowed us to take, if you were going from downtown to out to the park, to take over the right-hand side. So it's three lanes wide, and, oh, God, from that Sears Hill, 50, 60 blocks down to Market?
Everybody was there, and that was just another part of the country.
It was filled.
That's right. That's what it takes sometimes.
There had to have been a million people at that march.
No question. That's what it takes, I'm afraid to say. What it takes.
Well, but in the modern world, I'll throw a little cold water on this. In the more modern era, in the present era, the fact that a march happens and then goes away means that it can be ignored by the power structure.
Oh, correct. I mean, what happened back when we first talked about going into Iraq? Hundreds, thousands, millions of people hit the streets in the United States and said no. And we did it anyhow.
Yeah.
And we're still there.
It's all linked. Oil fucking companies.
Hey, and speaking of which, I ran across a story earlier today because we deal with so much icky stuff. That when I find something pleasant, I do like to at least give it a little bit of sunshine. I ran across this over at Think Progress. There is a British company that has developed solar cloth. And when I see stories like this, I always think of our buddy Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, who keeps saying, you know, that day is coming. You know, the starship time is coming. Solar Cloth Company of Cambridge, England. They're running trials right now of a fabric that is photovoltaic in nature that can be stretched across, this article says, parking lots, buildings, like sports stadiums with lightweight retractable roofs. And because I love sailboats, I've long looked at sailboats and thought, man, if you could go back with modern lightweight fibers and build something the size of one of the one of the clipper ships, and you had at the same time a fabric you could use to make the sails that would gather solar energy and maybe some way of gathering wind energy. You know, that's really the future. The friends of coal type people who think, you know, without coal we're going to freeze to death in the dark. Well, no, because think about it. You know, electricity has been ubiquitous for how long, and still isn't in many parts of the world, and people aren't freezing to death. Or if they, well, okay, that's a broad statement. But anyway, there's a future coming when we're going to back away by dint of the finite nature of resources. We're going to have to back away from the profligate use of energy and the profligate use of hydrocarbons. And so, you know, I keep getting little glimpses of this future where, well, for instance, there was an article I read a few months back. The United States Marine Corps, which has had a brutal time of it in Afghanistan, and has all of these gizmos and gimcracks and vehicles and stuff that have cost millions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money to develop. You know what the United States Marine Corps has started using in Afghanistan? Mules. Pack mules. And they're better than any the gasoline or diesel-powered vehicle they've got for getting up and down the little tiny trails that run through those mountains.
Yep, there are mountains that jeeps just can't tackle.
And, you know, there's a future coming. I mean, like we were talking earlier, Roger, when you were talking about, you know, what is the carbon, you know, what's the carbon cost of a nuclear power plant construction and decommissioning? Well, you know, look, what's the carbon cost, as I said before, of a wind turbine or a solar panel? We're going to have to start factoring all of this stuff in. And you know what? I would guess that the net carbon outlay of making photovoltaic cloth is probably less than the net carbon outlay of, say, an electric generator, a gas-powered electric generator.
Did you happen to catch on Facebook the other day about some country somewhere that's putting down a solar bike lane?
I have pictures of that. It's in the Netherlands. It's called Starry Night for Van Gogh. It's gorgeous.
Probably from the same people that have the solar road concept.
Well, now, right. What would happen if we took, and Sparky, this is more focused to you, if we took the entire center lane of I-5 from the Oregon border to where it goes up over the top of the mountain into L.A., and filled the center divide of I-5 with solar panels. You've got all kinds of power lines crossing back and forth over that damn roadway and feed it into the grid.
Well,
and I'll bet it would cost less than a month of our military-industrial complex screwing around the world.
Have you ever seen the conceptual drawings on the high-speed rail system?
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen them, but I don't remember them too good.
Well, they were thinking of building wind turbines all along the route, along the solar panels.
On the high-speed rail?
On the high-speed rail.
And that would probably power the entire rail.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, my God, we can't provide money to alternative energy. And yet I just saw something the other day that, you know, everybody bitches about the Solyndra bankruptcy. That program has made over $5 billion for the government, even with Solyndra going down.
Yeah, it just came out the other day.
Yeah.
Department of Energy loans that were part of Solyndra.
Because the Department of Energy loans were to fill in where the venture capitalists didn't want to provide money because the risk was too great. The federal government put the money in, and it's paid back.
Well, they did that all over California.
Yeah.
It has set up a whole new industry for venture capitalists to jump in. They're jumping in. They know they're making money off of it.
Well,
if they just renew the wind energy tax credit, they could create a whole bunch more jobs.
Right, and of course, the Republican Party in control of Congress isn't going to do that, Sparky, because their goal is to destroy the renewable energy industry. I mean, when you think for a minute about the power of a message that has filtered down to a talk radio listener in Richmond, Virginia, who calls a radio show to tell me that wind power and solar panel don't work.
Did you tell him that it works in California?
I've straightened him up, yes, in the time that I had available to me. But I mean, the message, and that's a larger topic of conversation. The messaging has been effective on their side, and our side is still out there playing checkers while they're playing nine-dimensional chess from a messaging and media standpoint. You know, that's why I wind up at 10. That's why I wind up at 10 minutes before the program ends, going, "Hey, folks, Carol's Hooterville Holler gift basket offer is still on the table for anybody who wants to put up $75, and we've got $110 to go to finish the week in okay shape." And that's how that works.
Can I say something, Bob?
Yeah, go.
On the pistachios or the ghost pepper cheese is still up, but the pistachios. My supplier no longer stocks the jalapeno pistachio.
But he's got a supply of other stuff.
But they got garlic jalapeno,
which is good.
They got honey mustard, which Laborman got, which he said raved about. They got regular garlic. They got chili and lime, and they got salted.
So that's still out there, your choice, the pistachios or the smoky ghost pepper cheese for your $100 contribution. And just send me...
Well, I got the jalapeno garlic, I think it was.
Yes, you did.
And they could have put more jalapeno in for me, but they are tasty.
So that's just an update.
Wonderful. So... Well, I didn't want to go ahead and put it out there without knowing what the supply status was.
Okay, I got one more off-topic number here. I've been looking around. Apparently Angry Indian has a program.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
I can't seem to find it.
I'll put the link in the Skype chat.
I'm
not upstairs.
Well, I mean, if you've got the link, just...
Sparky, I'll get back to you on that.
All right,
one of these other times when we're together.
But there are other people who want it, too.
All right, it's the Angry Indian at blogspot.com. You've got a blogspot address.
Angry, okay. Is it the Angry Indian or Angry Indian dot blogspot.com?
I think it's probably Angry Indian. And it's the Intelligent Aboriginal radio network. That's the name of the podcast. And I don't know if he wants his other name out here on the
No, that's enough. People need to be able to find the program.
Only what's posted on the internet.
Okay. All right then. I think
There's a link I got. I posted in Skype chat.
That's a good link.
Okay. Friends, I'll dig through Skype chat when I go back upstairs. But
friends,
I'm standing in the garage drinking beer.
Okay. I just Googled Angry Indian Blogspot. Came right up.
Yeah, Aboriginal Radio. WordPress.com. That's what Sparky just put up.
Because I'd like to listen to him a little bit more.
Yeah, it goes on about 3 hours, and he's got a certain format. He's got, you know, it's.
Oh, he and I had a magnificent conversation on his program, more than a year back now.
And last night was excellent.
Last night was good.
Last night?
Yeah, he's always good.
Oh, okay.
We had the internet radio out at the man cave, and we were listening. My stepson says, I love this. I like this dude.
Yeah, you'll get a perspective that you won't find anywhere, you know, because he's got his own take on stuff.
I just wish he'd learn not to hold back so much.
Yeah, he is. Angry is a bit the shrinking violet, isn't he, Carol?
I love that guy.
Carol, you're saying what? I'm sorry, I missed what you were saying.
I was being facetious. I said he has to learn not to hold back so much.
Oh, well, I'm glad that he's doing what he's doing. We need to hear more of his. You know, there aren't many people doing that anymore.
Well, if it's all a matter of work schedule, and I haven't talked. I probably shouldn't put it out there publicly, but you know, I'll be happy to run what he does on the Horns rerun stream if he wants me to do
that. Oh, that would be cool.
By the way, we just heard from Sal Sparky. And
I know. I saw he was in the chat.
Okay, so you still got his address?
Oh, you betcha.
Okay, Sal would like to enjoy some more smoky ghost pepper cheese, please. And we remember, of course, that his beloved is not so into the spicy, so he's being selfish again.
Bob?
Okay, I will get it out Monday.
Bob, I just wanted to plug for something. I was listening to Driftglass and Bluegal today, and they were saying that no amount of Tom Hartman telling people, trying to explain the liberal or the progressive point of view to conservatives is going to work. Number one, because the conservatives already made up their minds, and the people that are equivocating listen to these people like whatever his name is. I can't remember. I think he's an NBC guy, and people like Stephanopoulos, that every time somebody points out that the Republicans are crazy, then they point out that, the Democrats are crazy, too.
Right. It's the false BS dualism. Larry, why do you think right-wingers are not allowed on this program?
I understand, yes. Because their point of view gets out everywhere.
Hey, Bob, can I have one?
Yeah, jump right in, Sparky.
Sign off on the Skype group. If you're new to Skype, you just put it on your computer. You have to have a Skype name. If you know your Skype name and you want to become a member of this group, just shoot Bob your Skype name in an email, and he'll forward it on to me, and I will contact you.
Absolutely. Skype. Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, hey, things got better at the very end. Thank you very kindly, Sal. Sparky is thrilled to be sending you another installment of Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese. That means we will close the evening only $10 down. So thank you very, very kindly. And thanks to everybody who made all of this happen this evening. Thanks to the extraordinary, ordinary members of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, Friday on the Front Porch edition. Thank you, of course, to Sparky for his moderation of the group. Thanks to Sergi and Lance and Larry and Tim, Carol and Harry. We got to hear more from you next time, Harry, and Roger and Sentient Steve. Thank you. And, of course, you're all welcome to join in anytime you wish. You just heard Hal. Thanks for your kind contributions that keep all of this going. That means thanks to Sal and Glenn and Terrace and I'm scrolling down again. Let me just get this pulled up real quick before we get out of here. I want to make sure we get all the thank yous out. Yeah, thanks to Sal and Glenn and Terrace and Thomas and Brenda. Brenda wrapped us up last night. Thank you to Robert last night as well. Thanks, everybody, for making it possible for this conversation to continue night after night. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back at it on More and Monday. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, who helps us manage all of the technological wizardry that goes into the production of this program. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. It is through the White Rose Society that all of this happens, every packet that passes goes through a White Rose server. Thank you, Ben. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.